Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, quick reminder, tomorrow morning, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ, 6 to 10, Sedano show after that. Will Kane will follow, Mason in Ireland, and then Sliwa show, 6:30 to 9, tomorrow and Friday, so obviously. And then just another kind of quick plug. So Kamenitsky brothers do this happy hour on the ESPN Los Angeles Twitter page on Twitter. And Mason's going on with them a little bit later tonight, I think from 10 to 11. So I'll throw that out there as well. Okay, so let's stay on the baseball front for a quick second. Bob Nightingale, USA Today's Bob Nightingale, was on Mason in Ireland. And I want to play this clip in just a second. But this is the sticking point that that remains right now with baseball. I hit on this yesterday. It's going to be impossible. That Major League Baseball, if it comes down to this 50-50 split, and this is typically what happens in negotiations, I'm sure that the owners threw that out to have some type of wiggle room. Eventually, they have to come to a decision, because if the public were to find out that there is no baseball this year, and it's not just because of COVID-19, but it's because the owners and the Players Association couldn't come to some type of agreement. And I'll emphasize again, I said this yesterday, I don't believe that's going to happen. But can you imagine if it did, that's what it came down to? Here's USA Today's Bob Nightingale on what is the owner's biggest fear in this dispute.
The owner's biggest fear in this thing is you play a couple months or 1 month, whatever, and then another wave hits. And the postseason's canceled. That's where they make their money. That's their biggest fear. So I think at some point they'll do a compromise, like, okay, how about we defer some of your money into October, November? If there's a postseason, you get all back. If not, then we keep it. That sort of thing. Because the owners are saying we'll take a huge hit if we can't have a postseason. And the players are saying, well, we're taking a risk by being in the field. But, nobody. No, I don't think anybody in the world would think, okay, we're going to cancel the season when we're allowed to play over money. I think it'd be worse than the 94 World Series being canceled.
100% it would be worse. 100%. Especially right now. I mean, you hear how excited I got for 2 minutes there? I was going to start my show tonight talking about how I was going to just paint a picture. Think about July. Think about the potential July could look like. It's been a crazy time in the world over the last 8 weeks, just over 8 weeks now. And if you start, obviously counting some of the other countries that have been dealing with COVID-19 before the United States, or before it actually became a pandemic, where we started shutting down every state and shut down our travel and everything else, it's been a crazy time. And in the sports side of it, we have been waiting for any type of live sports to come. And that has a lot to do, I think, for people just kind of coping with situations like this. I know for me, man, I could be having a bad day. Things aren't going well. There's this routine of coming home, turning on the TV, and watching some sports, watching the team that you love, watching SportsCenter and the highlights, tuning into NBA TV, NFL Network, whatever it is. Doesn't matter what your favorite sport is. And all that is gone at a time where I think we all would love live sports. Bob Nightingale just mentioned this on Mesa and Ireland about, can you imagine, but he doesn't think it's going to happen, that they wouldn't be able to finish a season if it just came down to the money side of things. And by the way, that owner's explaining it from an owner's perspective that way, saying, what if we played for 4 weeks and then we can't play anymore because there's just too many players testing positive for COVID-19 and now you're not going to have that postseason. I get their argument and their point. Okay, come up with a solution. Figure it out. Players and the owners, find a way to make it work for everybody, because there are an incredible amount of eyes that are watching what Major League Baseball does. There was an incredible amount of eyes watching what UFC did this past weekend. And I want to read off a couple things. Kevin Draper, the New York Times, on Saturday at UFC 249, Gotti, I think is his name. I can't pronounce it. And Joe Rogan shouldn't have touched, let alone stood within 6 feet of each other. There was supposed to be a no face-to-face in Octagon post-fight or backstage interview, according to a plan. Instead, interviews would be conducted via headset with UFC interviewers or commentators who will be stationed in a separate arena zone. I read that because as we're talking about how we want to get sports back, everybody's got to follow these guidelines. UFC had that opportunity this past Saturday. And what they are saying is that UFC didn't necessarily follow the guidelines that they were supposed to. I'll read one more part of this. Wrapping up the televised event, the analyst Daniel Cormier explained how Rogan had received permission to do interviews that violated social distancing guidelines. You threw a fit before the show, Cormier said to Rogan. This is insane. Everybody's been tested. We're all clean. I love me some Joe Rogan. I think Jesse and I talk about it a lot during halftime. I mentioned it to Mason and Ireland a couple different times. Rogan is fantastic to listen to his podcast. What we can't have happen right now in the world of sports is people being cavaliers and think, you know what? I don't believe in this stuff. I'm not all in on this social distancing. When you're in a public stage like this and UFC is trying to see if that they can continue to have these events in a safe format, and that we know that not all these tests are accurate, and we also know that you can be asymptomatic, which means you might have COVID-19, but you're not showing signs yet, and you're probably even not even testing positive. When we know this type of stuff, and you got a lot of these other leagues watching, and you have a lot of health officials watching, making sure that if we get sports back, you're doing it the right way. Come on now. Follow the damn rules. You know, UFC, President Dana White, Joe Rogan, who I just mentioned, is probably one of the best podcasts that's out there. I learned more stuff on his podcast than I probably learned out of any of the other shows that I listen to. It's incredibly important that these sports, especially the ones that are starting to have live events again, set the freaking right example. Set the right example. There should not be articles that are coming out, this one, Kevin Draper of the New York Times, that are saying, yeah, UFC, they did their live event. They did a lot of good things, but there's also a lot of things that they didn't follow some of the guidelines on. Can't have that. If any of us got a chance, by the way, it's not even just to get sports back, but you want the public to have a good perception. You want the public to say, okay, I feel good about what they're doing. A lot of these athletes could very well, kind of set an example for everybody else. So that's my quick take on UFC. You're going to keep having these live events. Please don't be cavaliers. Do it the right way. Take the right safety guidelines. Joe Rogan, don't go in the octagon to interview the fighter that just won. Just stand on the outside with a headset. That's okay. That's what everybody's doing on TV right now. That's what everybody's doing on radio right now. We're all keeping our distance, and you have to if you're a sport that's going to do live events. Set the right example. All right, halftime is coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Quick reminder, Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times coming up at 8:30. What happened to that Lakers dynasty in 2011? We'll get into that. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Jess, we're 0 for 2 right now on Curtis. I know he's got a little got to get him back in. We got to get Curtis back in.
He's almost back. I talked to him earlier today, and he's doing fine.
Okay.
He's still unsure if he'll be back tomorrow or the rest of the week, but for now, he's doing fine. He is recovering. Alrighty. Shout out to you, Curtis, wherever you are.
We'll get Curtis back when he's ready.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple things. I want to start off with this. The Los Angeles Rams.
Oh, what did they do today?
Today, they came out with their new jerseys, and I know it's a big deal because a lot of people didn't like their logos, and you have definitely a very opinionated Los Angeles Rams crowd. By the way, just a lot of opinionated folks in LA. What was your initial thoughts? I saw it on Twitter. You know, this is a tweet that the Rams put out. You see Jared Goff. You see Aaron Donald. You see basically the white, and then you see the all white, and you see the all blue. What was your first initial thought of the jerseys?
Not bad.
Okay.
Not the logo, you know, I wasn't a real big fan of, but when I saw his jerseys,
logo's not good.
No.
Logo's not good.
I was like, it's not bad. I like, they kept it real simple. I don't know if I expect them to go that route. One thing I don't like is the patch in the on the off on to like the right underneath, mm-hmm. like where the shoulders are. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the placement for the I think it's their bone jersey, that like offset yep. white one that's just kind of etched in and it just says Los Angeles Rams.
Helmets are nice.
Oh, the helmets are gorgeous.
Solid.
The helmets are really good. The way they implemented the logo on the helmets are really good. I love that. But besides that, I was like, it's not bad. It's not bad. And it's growing on me a little bit. The more I kind of see them, the more I'm like, all right, they're not too bad.
Okay, so this comes, and I think there's a lot of curiosity about this just simply because that logo, which I always felt like the logo right now, if you go on Los Angeles Rams, I have no reason to hate. Like, I really don't. Wish nothing but success to the Rams. But there are a lot of people that don't like the logo. And I'm one of them that definitely doesn't like the logo. So I'm surprised they didn't do something about that. But I thought their jerseys that came out today, I was okay with them. I was okay with them. Let's play real quick because I'm going to get your thoughts on the best jersey in the NFL. But before I do that, LA Rams COO Kevin Demoff was on with Mason in Ireland, and here's what he says about people who don't like the new uniforms.
You spend time with fans over the past few years, you walk through tailgates, you have focus groups, you listen, and you find out what's important. And what, you know, overwhelmingly we heard from fans was, you know, they love the blue and yellow. And from there, it's been a process that, you know, we're building this beautiful modern stadium, 2020. How do we design a look that plays into the memories that our fans who have loved the Rams for a long time? What you're trying to do is to provide balance. And look, here's the ultimately, you know, we design the logos, the colors, the uniforms, all to be part of the SoFi Stadium experience for Rams fans. That doesn't mean that if you love the new look, great, you're going to go out and buy a jersey and show up and wear that and be loud and proud of SoFi Stadium. Do I expect there to be Deacon Jones and Jack Youngblood and Eric Dickerson jerseys, you know, that are throwbacks? Absolutely. We expect that too. That's part of the tapestry of what makes our fan base great, and it's what we all weigh. But I think in the end, we have always been prided ourselves on being a innovative, progressive organization, one that pushes the envelope, whether it's hiring a 30-year-old head coach, whether it's Stan Kroenke making a bold move to build a stadium in Los Angeles and solve 20 years of the NFL not being there. I think each time you look at those things, that pushing the envelope and moving forward has always been part of our DNA, and I think that's where we lean to, but it is not at the exclusion of anybody.
All right, that's Kevin Demoff right there, who was on with Mason Ireland. So this is what I take from it, all right? And we got a chance last week to talk to Demoff, and he was as nice as can be, so it was great to have him as a guest of the show. It comes down to this for me. I just think that logo looks too similar to the Los Angeles Chargers. That's it. That's it. It feels like that could almost be like a lightning bolt. So that's the issue that I had with that. But if you're also Kevin Demoff and you're saying this is what we're rolling with, this is what our study group showed, okay, I'm not going to be mad at it. You know, like this is it's their organization, it's not ours. But I think there are a lot of fans that are not crazy about the logo. Hopefully they like the jerseys and the helmet, because I think the jerseys and the helmet look good.
Yeah, ultimately what's going to happen is if they start winning, you know, no one's going to really care as much. So that's what the ultimate goal is, which is why I think Demoff is really confident with the logo and the jerseys, regardless of the bad feedback, is because he's confident that the team he has put together, the organization has put together,
sure,
they're going to come back and, you know, at least be in that contention for a playoff hunt, or, you know, maybe a deep, real deep playoff
hunt. Gotta make the playoffs. Gotta make the playoffs this year. I mean, there's no, you know, this upcoming season, Jess, and I know you know this because we've talked about it, seven teams now go from both sides. Seven teams from both sides, which means last season, the Rams 9-7 record would have got them in. Now, it's not going to be an easy schedule. The division is unbelievable. It's the best division in football, but they have to be in the mix come postseason in January, and hopefully, you know, obviously the schedule stays as is. So that was the longest way for me to set this up. Best vintage jersey in the NFL.
Vintage jerseys. That's a good one.
This one's easy for me.
What is it for
Want
you?
Let me give you mine.
What is yours?
The San Diego Chargers. Those throwback uniforms, and I say the San Diego Chargers because that really is what this team is, and I still think nobody in LA cares that they're out here. And frankly, now that San Diego lost the team, they don't care that they're out here. But those San Diego Charger vintage jerseys, those powder blue jerseys, those I think
nice.
A lot of people love the look of those jerseys. And that's what I would say is the best one out there. What's your favorite vintage jersey out there? There's a lot of good ones, by the way.
There is a lot of good ones. But for me, it's going to go back to the team I root for, and it's that those – there's two. It's that Joe Montana era 49ers home jerseys, and it's the 94 Steve Young, you know, and Deion Sanders was on that team, that all-white kind of like block and red. Beautiful. And those were my two that time. Primetime's great.
How about just even primetime right now on NFL Network? Is that dude just not the man?
Oh, you can tell he's having fun. Anytime he talks, he's just having a good
and
time.
The players love him. I mean, just love him. What's his thing that he does? He does with the call. If you ball, you get the call. Something like that.
Something
when
along
calls
those lines.
You on
yeah.
NFL Network.
Yes, he'll FaceTime the player like
if
right after
ball,
the game.
You get the call.
Yeah, something along the lines of that. Yeah, that was great.
That's as good as marketing can get. By the way, Sporting News put out this ranking of top vintage jerseys. Guess what jersey was number one? Guess what team?
Let's see. I'm looking at the teams right now. I have like a list so that way I can like visualize. I'm against the Bears.
I definitely didn't think it would be this team. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers had the number one jersey.
Oh, please
vintage
tell
jersey.
Me it's those disgusting ones. From
yeah,
right
they are. They're definitely disgusting.
See, now I don't believe that. Did the Onion put that out?
No, this is the disgusting, like orangey, you know, that
yes.
Tampa Bay.
I can't wait for Tom Brady to wear that jersey in Tampa Bay.
Okay, speaking of Brady, New England number three, which, by the way, those are – beautiful jerseys. Those
it's just very classic.
Yep. Houston Oilers at number four, Philadelphia at number five.
Not bad.
It just kind of gives you an idea of some of those vintage jerseys.
You know what?
Were you saying something else?
Yeah.
On that front? Mm-hmm.
What jerseys I kind of like now, I hate that I have to say this because two of my best friends are Ravens fans and I don't like to agree with them, but I really like the Baltimore Ravens jerseys. There's something about that purple and black combination that just always pops and it looks amazing.
You know what I like about the Baltimore Ravens?
Lamar Jackson?
Week number three, Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson. Come on now.
That's the main matchup everyone is looking forward to. I can't wait to watch that game too. But I'm cheering for the Chiefs that game. I know that for sure. I'm watching it with my two buddies if you know, all this is calmed down by then. And
that's one of those games, Jess, that I don't know if I have a rooting dog. Like I like both of those players. Like how do you hate on Mahomes? How do you hate on Lamar Jackson? You know, like how? Like what have they done to hate on them?
Nothing. They've done nothing but basically showcase that they're the next generation of NFL quarterbacks.
No question
Hands
about that.
Down.
All right. What do you got over there?
All right. So over the weekend, me and my buddies were playing video games, and somehow the conversation slipped to like –
Did you get your girlfriend her flowers?
You know what? I did get her flowers. It's her birthday today. Happy birthday, baby. She is X years young.
Uh-huh.
Young, the key word, not old. X years young.
You say happy birthday, baby, and like somebody just tuned in, they think you said that to me.
Hey, you know what? That's the way they think, baby. Come on now.
All right, keep going. Go back to yours. So you got the flowers?
I got the sunflowers. I actually went to two different florists. Because I also saw my mom today. She kind of surprised me and said, I'm gonna come down today. So I was like, oh, perfect. I can get flowers for my mom, too, because I didn't see her for Mother's Day.
Go.
So I got her
Everybody's getting flowers.
Good flowers, too. No cheap stuff here.
Okay, so you're with your friend. Tell the story.
Yeah, I was with my friends over the weekend. And somehow we started talking about music and old music.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, music you grew up to. So my first instinct came back to Creed. Do you know the band Creed?
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, for anyone who wasn't alive in the, late 90s, early 2000s, this is Creed. I'm free. come on. This is like the ultimate late 90s, early 2000s rock right here.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely is. Okay, where are we going with this? Tell me where we're going.
So, Alan, my question to you is, what band that you grew up listening to or even that you still listen to now that you're a little ashamed or a little, like, embarrassed that you like?
When – this is so random. Well, I could actually do a couple. What was the one?
I can do a couple, too, because Creed is just one of them. And I'm not going to lie. After that conversation, the next time I was in the car, I put on Creed and I rocked out to their greatest hits.
Okay, let me give you one. When Limp Bizkit came out
– Limp Bizkit, yes!
I was in my head – I was like, yeah, no, this is, like, the greatest band ever. Like, how do you get better than Limp Bizkit? Like, how stupid? You know what I mean? Like, think about, there was this portion where Limp Bizkit was the era. And it was, like, now you go back and you listen to it. I'm like, what was Fred Durst doing? Like,
I'm going to go back home to Nate. When I go back home, listen to Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water.
Okay, listen. Here's another one. Here's another random one. How about when Cisco came out with Thong Song?
Oh man!
You know what I'm talking about?
That was a one hit wonder. He lived
one
on that one
hit
song.
Like that is the definition of a one hit wonder. I can't name another Cisco song. This dude came out with Thong Song, and all of a sudden it was like top of the charts, as if Michael Jackson came out with Beat It or something, right? Like it's you look back at it now, and you're like, why was I listening to this music?
Yeah,
can
anyone really name a Cisco song other than the Thong Song?
I don't think he came out with another song. I think he stayed right there. He's like, look, I got my one hit wonder. I got plenty of cash now. I'm good. I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, my mind is still on Limp Bizkit because now I'm going through their whole catalog in my head. You got, you know, Nookie and the, you know, how
oh,
I
yeah, that's right.
How I became
Did it all for the nookie.
The nookie.
What is that song?
That's a great. What is a nookie? Is it a cookie with just the C taken out? And then the
video is weird too.
Mm-hmm. But you know, wrestling actually introduced me to Limp Bizkit because the Undertaker, during one of his gimmick phases, when I was watching wrestling more religiously. As a child, when I had a lot more time, I can just sit on the TV and watch wrestling. It was his theme song. Now it's escaping me on how it goes. But it's
which wrestler? Which wrestler?
The Undertaker.
For Undertaker.
It was the last ride. Keep rolling. That's what it was. Keep rolling. What?
I mean, listen. There was definitely good music in that era, in that time. It just wasn't coming from the bands that I just named off. I mean, Weezer, classic during that time. And Weezer was good for so long. Even Blink had its moment. And I'm just thinking of like just some different.
You want to know
music.
Something? You tune into.
No Use for a Name was good. I don't know if you remember them. No Use for a Name.
But if you tune into to some rock stations locally, you'll definitely hear Blink-182 and Weezer a lot.
Oh, I'm not surprised. No, I mean, they.
For whatever reason, they are local legends.
Those guys were cranking out classics for a long time. You know what I mean? They're not Red Hot Chili Peppers, but they were cranking out classics for a long time. Actually, Weezer's pretty damn.
You know
Weezer's
what?
Been
they're
good for
they're
a long
consistent.
Time.
They've you know put out a lot of albums. Every now and then is a hit. It's that band that just kind of they just keep going, and you know their fan base is really dedicated to them. Where
oh, big time.
You know they put out a single. And their listeners and their followers and their fans all crowded and rushing. It's like, yeah, this is the one. Like, the last real big Weezer song that I can remember in my head that just – the first one is, like, Beverly Hills. And that was in, like, the mid-2000s.
You know, I haven't been to – I've never been to a Weezer concert. That would definitely be a concert.
I've seen Weezer a few –
That'd be a great show.
Twice.
That'd be a great show to go see. Okay,
so
I got –
A lot of hits you don't think you have.
I got one more for you. I did this on Crosstalk. So today is National Apple Pie Day. Did you know that?
I did know that because I listened to your Crosstalk.
Okay, so National Apple Pie Day. So we talked about it, and we were saying that what goes in, what's your Mount Rushmore of pies? Who gets on that list? I'll give you mine real quick because I mentioned it on Crosstalk. I got apple pie's got to make the list. Blueberry, throw some blueberry in there. I know between cherry and blueberry, it's a tough one. I'm going blueberry. Pumpkin pie and key lime pie. Those are my four pies. What are you putting in there? By the way, pie sounds amazing right now. Go ahead.
Well, my favorite pie in the world is pecan pie.
Yeah, that's good. Only a little sweet. A little on the sweet side.
Only reason I like it is because that was The Rock's favorite pie. Because I'm not overall a big pie person, but
everything
all I know
back
is
to wrestling.
Pecan.
Everything back to
it's, you know what? It's just, it is what it is. I can, for whatever reason, I can always link something back to wrestling.
Okay, but give me a
pecan pie is one. You know what are really good? The apple pies from McDonald's. They're not really like pies in like the classic sense.
I'm with you on that.
But man, those apple pies hit the spot.
So there's a place down in San Diego called Julian's Pie. And it's this famous spot. And it's like from where I'm in East San Diego, it's another 45 minutes east. So like I haven't been there since I was a kid. But there's a grocery store not too far from where my parents, where I grew up, that sells these Julian pies. Bro, there's nothing better than getting a pie. You know, of course, if you're getting it at a restaurant, that's different because it's coming out warm. But, you know, you could put it in the oven, whatever the case is. Pies are underrated. They're just underrated. I saw today National Apple Pie Day. I was like, all right, what kind of pie are you putting on that top four list? That's my selection right there.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm more of a, you know, if I'm getting the dessert, I'm going all in and getting like ice cream, a sundae, a shake. But my absolute favorite dessert by far is a good slice of cheesecake.
Yeah, we got to start talking about food, bro. Thank you, Jess. Thank you for doing this. But
I'm getting hungry.
We've been doing this. Yesterday we were doing eggs. Remember we were talking about.
I feel like we always talk about food on this. We should have a chef come on the show.
And that's like, not a bad idea at all. Okay, but not like just a chef. Like, well, let me think here.
We got the $20 chef.
Give it thought.
I'm going to hit up Guy Ferrari. What is his name? Guy Ferrari?
No, Ferrari. I think it's Ferrari. But that's not a bad idea. Have like a cook come on.
Ooh,
a cook
would be a good idea. What about Gordon Ramsay?
How about this? How about find a local chef or a local cook or something along those lines? Let's find somebody that's rooted in LA.
Yo, anyone out there listening? Know anyone? Jesse, JesseIE.Lopez@ESPN.com. Send them my way. I'll do what I can because I love the food.
And you set it up from there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, now my mouth is getting watery now.
All right, Jess. Good stuff, buddy. Thank you, bud. All right. When we come back, I know I don't talk much Clippers basketball on this radio station. And a lot of the times I give Clippers the credit that they deserve when I need to. And then I also I'm very honest about Los Angeles Clippers basketball. But when we come back, I do want to talk about Clippers basketball, and I want to talk specifically about Paul George. So we'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Tell him, Cisco. Oh, how was this song a hit? Somebody want to tell me how this song was a hit? Oh, Cisco Thong Song. God bless him. Dominic Buchanan on Twitter, @ Alan Sliwa, Unleash the Dragon, Cisco. We got you, man.
Hey,
we got you,
look
Dominic.
At that.
We got you. I don't know how I transitioned from here back to sports, but man, that was
look at that song. Hair.
And let me actually say too, Jess, still a very catchy song.
Song. It's a pretty catchy beat too. Come on.
Still a freaking catchy song. All right, let's do this. So I don't do this often. I don't talk about the Clippers too often. I thought the Los Angeles Clippers, before the season got paused, I had mentioned this, and I think I do it in the post-game show, and anytime I was doing my shows, I look at Paul George as one of those players that this playoff series or this playoff run, and if we do get it back, it's still going to be – he'll still be under the same circumstances. He'll still be – kind of still have that weight on his shoulder. Kawhi Leonard's the best player on that team, but Paul George, probably the way he does, will be the difference of whether they get past the Lakers or they don't. So Stephen A. Smith was talking about Paul George, and specifically, this was on First Take, that he's underachieved since leaving the Pacers. And before I play this, I just want to say that he is a different player from the time that he was with the Pacers to what he's been with his stint with the Oklahoma City Thunder and now his stint with the Los Angeles Clippers. And this upcoming playoff run, again, if we get there, is going to defy a lot about Paul George. You guys remember this about a week ago? I was having a conversation about, I don't know how duos came up, and, you know, best duos in the NBA. I know we've had this conversation 90 times, so I don't need to go over it again. But what I was saying is it's disrespectful to even say that that Clippers duo is in the same category as a Lakers duo. And it's not because Kawhi Leonard is not top five, but it's because Paul George isn't in that conversation. Paul George is not on Anthony Davis's level. Now, that's my personal opinion. Some people might not like it, but a big man that's doing what AD was doing this year, that's top five in the league. I don't put Paul George in that conversation. So here's Stephen A. Smith on First Take talking about Paul George and that how he's underachieved since leaving the Pacers.
I believe he has, and that's a hard thing for me to say because I love him as a player and a person. I think that he's definitely a star in this league. But you know what? I would say the same about him as I would say about Russell Westbrook. Ever since Kevin, I think Russell Westbrook's a superstar. But ever since Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City, he hasn't been out of the first round. You got Paul George there. You're not out of the first round, Paul George. Obviously, we didn't anticipate that that would be the case this year with the Los Angeles Clippers. We all had them at the very least going to the Western Conference Finals, but Paul George is a star in this league. Obviously, when he went against LeBron in Miami, he got to the Conference Finals, and obviously he came up short, and there's no shame in coming up short to LeBron. Then he had that nasty injury in the summer games, and that derailed him, and then he came back. You got to give him credit for that, but I'm just looking at a guy that's a star, that's a two-way player as a star, and he's never been in an NBA Finals. No shame in it when you consider the fact that he's been to the Conference Finals, but when I think about the star that is Paul George and the manner in which we've talked about him, certainly when he paired with Russell Westbrook, I did not expect him to go home in the first round and get put to bed by Damian Lillard, but that's exactly what happened, and that's the only reason that I say that.
So Paul George, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but he's just not an alpha. He's not that player that wants to be the best player on the team. He's not. Russell Westbrook was the best player on the Thunder, and Paul George took a back seat. Now, part of the reason I think he has such a great friendship and respect with Russell Westbrook, and he knows what Westbrook has built there, the equity in Oklahoma City before he ended up with the Rockets, that has part to do with it. And then when he came here to play for the Los Angeles Clippers, of course Kawhi Leonard's the best player on that team, top three in the NBA, I would say Kawhi. And Paul George has taken a backseat on that. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to be the alpha on every team. To win a championship, you can't be – there are many occasions where Pau Gasol has to be the second best player. Kobe has to be the second best player when he's playing in those Shaq days, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. But I think something that's unique between Paul George and Anthony Davis, that this playoff run, if we get to complete this season, this was key for both of these guys. Paul George has never been to the NBA Finals. Anthony Davis has never been past the second round. There are some similarities between these two players and the goals that they were trying to have this year. LeBron's been the best player on the Los Angeles Lakers this season. AD right behind him, best defensive player in the NBA. Kawhi has been the best player for the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Clippers style is completely different than the Lakers. They have sat a lot of their guys. It definitely has been one of those years where load management came into play. They were prepping for the playoffs. But when I hear Stephen A. Smith say that he's underachieved since leaving the Pacers and it says it kills him to say it, there's nothing wrong with saying it. It's a truth. It's reality. Paul George has underachieved since he left the Pacers. This is his playoff run to prove that that's not the case, that if you put him in the right with the right teammates in the right system with the right coach, that he can win a championship. But that's the same conversation we're having about Anthony Davis as well. AD is also one of those players that he leaves the Pelicans, never got past the second round. You put him with the right players, the right role players, the right star, the right coaching staff, the right organization, he can take you to the next level. So I don't think there's anything wrong with Stephen A. Smith saying that. I 100% agree. And that's going to be the challenge for hopefully the Lakers and the Clippers at some point in the next 60 days. We're actually talking about games being played. All right, so Tanya Ganguly, who obviously writes for the LA Times, covers the Lakers. She had an article, and I want to just kind of, there's certain things that immediately draw my eye. And for Tanya, who did this article with Brad Turner, how the Lakers' last dynasty ended in a total dismantling. Okay, I know Laker fans are out there. Alan, why are you bringing us back to the past? You think we want to hear about that 2011 season where the Lakers lost to the Dallas Mavericks? Well, we're going to go back there because her and Brad Turner spent some time talking with the Phil Jacksons of the world, with Mitch Kupchak, obviously former Los Angeles Lakers GM, to go back to those days and what happened there. We'll do all that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times. How the Lakers' last dynasty ended in a total dismantling. You can read that story right now in the LA Times. Tanya, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Alan?
Doing all right. Now, I don't know if you knew today, it's National Apple Pie Day. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay. Not many people did. Your favorite pie. What's your favorite pie?
I have to say, apple's not my favorite. I think one of the berries, I would say. I like cherry pies a lot.
Okay. Cherry and blueberry were definitely some fan favorites out there. So
boysenberry. That's a good pie.
That's a good one. Key lime pie also made a lot of people's list.
Key lime, fantastic.
So now that we got that part out of the way, because I knew that was very important and you wanted to get that off, how are you doing? Everything going okay? I know it's been crazy for all of us, but maybe you could update us. What's going on in your world?
We just finished that project that you're talking about. That was the last piece in it. So I was doing that, just kind of trying to stay updated. And then actually tomorrow is my furlough day. The LA Times, we're all working 4-day weeks for a few months because of, economic struggles. So I'm going to try to read a full book.
Look at you. All right.
Do often during this time of year.
No, that's great. Well, hopefully, obviously for everybody, everything works out just the way we need it to down the road. But I loved your piece, and it kind of takes me back to those days too. So the concept here, the last dynasty for the Lakers, we all know, 2008, you get to the finals, you lose to the Celtics. 2009, you beat Orlando, and then 2010, you beat the Boston Celtics. But your story more is about how this dynasty ended. So let's go back to 2011. Lakers coming off of 3 straight trips to the NBA Finals. What happened in that 2011 season?
It was a year that they thought that they were going to do it again. There was no reason for them to believe otherwise going into that season. It was essentially the same team. Now you could argue because I don't know if I wrote a story earlier in the week, or maybe it ran over the weekend, where Kobe talked about how that 2010 championship team was one of his favorite teams he's ever played on. Just the roster. He loved, he felt like the guys all got along well, that it was a very together group. And there were some kind of minor changes made after that season that maybe could have had an impact on that chemistry. But some of the players that we talked to for this story just kind of talked about a different feel that year. I think one of the things that came up a few times was that they were kind of exhausted. They had played basically a full extra season's worth of games in the postseasons of the past 3 years. So there's that's difficult. They were at a point where they had, Phil Jackson that year didn't know if he would come back. He decided to come back. He'd been dealing with health problems. And, we quoted Derek Fisher as saying that he couldn't fully be there. That played into it also. I mean, he had other things to deal with. And then another interesting thing that came from Fisher was that he said that in that off season leading into the 2010-2011 season, he wasn't sure if the team wanted him back, and felt like it was kind of a different feel to just the organization that summer for whatever reason.
That is interesting, Tanya. I think sometimes we talk about teams that don't have any success. They can't win an NBA championship, and then they break it up. And then other times it almost feels that there are franchises out there or specific teams at certain points where they have, I don't know if too much success is the right word, but that hunger that they had a year ago or that hunger that they had 2 years ago, that purpose of trying to win that championship because you had that opportunity potentially against the Boston Celtics. Maybe that hunger wasn't – it doesn't sound like that hunger in 2011 was the same as it might have been 2 years ago or the year prior.
Yeah, see, I think that that was part of the issue, you know. And the other thing, I mean, you can look at, I mean, I think they took some solace in the fact that the Dallas Mavericks, who swept them in the playoffs that year, that they went on to win the championship. Like, that was kind of a soothing thing for the team, but they really acknowledged that they were having issues even before that. That was just the losing. Losing in four games to the Mavericks, like, that was just a symptom of what they had been seeing towards the end of the season and in their first round series.
I remember reading the article. I didn't know that they started off so well, 13-2. I don't remember, you know, just off the top of my head, I was like, damn, they won 57 games that year. Okay, you know, good regular season. But against the Mavs, I mean, they just came unhinged. I'll never forget. And, you know, just being a fan, too, it's like the representation of the organization where Bynum gets thrown out. Did Odom get thrown out in that game, too?
Yep.
I mean, they went out in absolute flames. And I think that is, you know, the icing on the cake of that dynasty ending.
Yeah, and I thought that was the thing that I led with that I thought was so interesting. Mitch Kupchak told me that Phil said to him after they lost, you know, I probably shouldn't have come back. And I think that, but you know, he said that, but then he also said, but I had to, because they just, if you have a chance to win three in a row, you have to try, even if you have some misgivings about whether or not it's going to be possible, even if you don't know. Even if it's not quite there, you have to try. And it was the ending there was pretty. It was a pretty spectacular fall for them.
Can you believe that? By the way, when you say that, that would have been Phil's fourth time with a three-peat.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. I mean, he would.
I mean, you think about that. That he had to do. That is exactly why he had to do it.
Sure. No, he already had three, and, you know, two, obviously, winning two in a row with the Lakers. That is insane to think that. The loss against Dallas, by the way, in that final game, second worst playoff loss in franchise history. They lost 122-86. And then that kind of carried on. I mean, if you look, the next season, if I'm correct, was that the failed attempt for Chris Paul?
Yep. Yeah. And that was a further unraveling, because at that point, you know, it affected the chemistry. It affected when you have a failed trade, as the Lakers know from recent history, it can be a big problem.
Of course. No, that was a moment that Laker fans, as you know, are still bitter about, you know, that the NBA jumped in and they stopped that trade from happening. Okay. So that kind of takes us back to that dynasty ending. If we move forward to just kind of look at where we are today, what's your thoughts on some of these, you know, the Friday meeting with Adam Silver and the players union, and to just kind of where we sit today and seeing some of the developments go on? What is do you feel confident about where we're heading right now, or do you still feel like there's a ton of questions to be answered?
I think there are some questions. I think the main thing that we've learned over the last, let's say, week and a half is that everybody really wants to figure out a way for the season to resume. And a lot of that's about money. I mean, there's a lot of money that they stand to lose. There's a lot of the business side of the game that will be disrupted if they don't find some way to finish the season. So I think that's, to me, that was my big takeaway. I mean, I think that there's also a sort of public relations issue for them, because they don't want to. They really want to give the impression, at least. And I'm not saying that this is not what they believe, but they at least want to show people that they do care about the health and safety aspect of this. And I think that there are players who care about that to varying degrees. I don't know that everybody is. I think there are some players who worry about it and who want to make sure everything is exactly right. And then there are others who say, it's going to be fine. Let's just do this. just like in regular society, as we've seen. You know, but my big takeaway from the past week was that there is a desire to actually do this, to figure out a way to play the games.
So Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show. So Tanya, when you know you were as close to watching the Lakers through 63 games and put themselves in a position with the best record in the Western Conference, I think it was safe to say, you know, one of the clear favorites to win a championship before stoppage, before play stopped. What do you think? If and when we do come back, what does this do for the Lakers? I don't want to just go into the, is this beneficial? It's not. But do you still see the Lakers walking out of this as, yeah, this is what would have changed? They're still going to be a favorites when we do come back.
Yeah, I mean, momentum is not I wouldn't want to discount the impact of momentum. So that would be my main concern when it comes to returning, whether the Lakers would be able to pick up right where they left off. I just think you don't know, you know, when it's this short of a period of time, it's hard to know exactly what will happen. Now, the Lakers came together really fast at the start of the season. So they were able to bond quickly, and they were able to, you know, gel quickly and figure things out. And I think the start that they had to the season is probably a reason for optimism for when they do return from this hiatus. But it's going to be weird. I mean, I just feel like there's an unknown because they're certainly not going to be able to play games at Staples Center for a while. I think that we can be pretty comfortable in saying that. I mean, I suppose I could be wrong on that, but it just doesn't seem like Los Angeles is going to allow that for a very long time. So, you know, and it does look like the NBA is thinking of the two-site plan, like that seems like the most likely scenario. So they'll be playing games in Vegas under completely different conditions than they normally do. They won't be able to rely on the crowd support that they enjoy everywhere they go. And it's going to be different. So I think I don't see how that couldn't have an impact if they're even able to do that. I mean, there are hurdles. I think one of the things the NBA is going to have to contend with is what do they do the next time somebody tests positive? Because it's bound to happen, even if they do this two-site plan. Do they shut down the league at that point, or do they figure out another way to handle it? You know, I think those questions are still not quite answered right now.
Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times, great article right now. She did with BT Brad Turner, How the Lakers' Last Dynasty Ended in a Total Dismantling. Also, Tanya Ganguly is a fan of, you said Cherry Pie, right? Cherry Pie?
Cherry Pie.
And so now we all know. Tanya, thank you. I appreciate your time, and stay safe. Hope you're doing well, and hopefully we get to connect soon, okay?
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that's Tanya Ganguly right there. You know when I go back, and one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Tanya on and talk about that 2011, that loss to the Dallas Mavericks, we're so weird as fans. I got to explain to you guys the roller coaster back in 2011, and then also how we kind of are so up and down with these different players based on decisions that they make on their personal life. I'll tell you what I mean coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show. By the way, anybody who wants to be a part of the show, always know that you can call in and we'll try and get you on 877-710-ESPN. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. And to think, this is what we used to listen to. Little Limp Bizkit.
I don't remember the songs so being funny. This distorted.
It's so funny to hear that. It's so funny to hear that music now. Bro, but those were the jams. I mean, they were the jams back then. Limp Bizkit was killing it back in the days. I think I was still in high school, so I think 2000 or so, something along those lines.
I mean, yeah.
Jess, let's do this tomorrow for halftime. Best one-hit wonders.
Oh, I already got a bunch.
Best one-hit wonders.
I'm glad we got Cisco out of the way because that's probably a big one.
it's so funny. You play that on something. By the way, those who didn't hear the segment before, they're probably like, what are we listening to? Why is Al playing Cisco?
They can
thong
listen
song?
To the podcast and they'll find That's right it. Out.
Actually, I don't think they can, because I think on the pod,
well, they can't hear the songs, but you know, we'll know what the conversation comes up.
They'll know. They'll know the reason behind it.
Oh, here we go. And stick it up, yo. Stick it up, yo.
I can't believe this was a hit. It was just absolute hit. Okay, so I got something here. Tanya Ganguly from the LA Times, she starts explaining the dynasty, how the dynasty ended the way it did back in 2011. It's actually kind of crazy. You forget that, yeah, that was a dynasty. You went to the finals three years in a row. You won two out of three championships. Yeah, technically, that is the definition of a dynasty. It's not this seven-year dynasty or five-year dynasty, but you win two championships, you do it in a row, and you go to the finals 3 years in a row. That's the equivalent of what the Detroit Pistons were doing in 89 and 90. That's the equivalent of the Houston Rockets winning two championships when Michael Jordan decided to play some baseball. But it's so funny as a fan, because I remember in 2011 how much I hated the Dallas Mavericks after they beat the Lakers. And then they beat the Lakers, and they end up playing the Miami Heat in the finals. And I was not a fan of LeBron James when he went to Miami. And this is just kind of the up and down from a fan perspective, right? And maybe you guys share this with me. Maybe you don't. I know Michael Thompson, if I'm sitting here and I'm saying, well, I hate when this player did that, he's basically like, Alan, yeah, stop talking. The players are going to do whatever they want to do. But that doesn't mean I can't have an opinion on how I feel or why would you go to that team or whatever the case is. So let me go back real quick. So the Mavs beat the Lakers in 2011. And then the Mavs get to the finals, and they're facing LeBron, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. It's the first time that Miami Heat, obviously that regime, get to the finals. They end up going to the finals 4 years in a row. And I cannot tell you how much I wanted the Miami Heat to lose. So I went from hating the Mavs to rooting for them as if I grew up in Dallas, Texas. Okay? All right, let's fast forward. And then LeBron decides to leave Miami and go back to Cleveland. And now I'm rooting for the Cavs as if I grew up in Ohio and my parents are from Akron, right? Like, now the Cavs become an underdog again and they're going up against the Golden State Warriors. KD, same thing with Kevin Durant. KD, when KD was in Oklahoma City, and obviously, look, the Lakers aren't in the mix here. They're not in the mix. If you guys remember that series where Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, they go up 3-1 on Golden State and then had, you know, obviously three chances to win, close out that series and get to the NBA Finals. And they lose to the Golden State Warriors. So Warriors come back from being down 3-1. KD and Russell Westbrook choke in key situations in Oklahoma City in Game 6. And KD, who was just this, you know, you were really rooting for him to get a chip and also to get one in Oklahoma City. Your Lakers team is out. Okay. Now you're starting to look for underdogs. And KD was one of those underdogs, even though he's the best player in the NBA or, you know, one of the top three players in the NBA. And then all of a sudden, KD decides to go to the Golden State Warriors. Now I hate KD. Now I don't want KD to win. I want the Warriors to lose. Isn't that funny from a fan perspective? We are all over the place when it comes to that. Some people are not like that, but for me, I'm typically going for the underdog. I'm typically cheering for the underdog. But I also don't want to see one of the best players in the league, you know, join forces with a team that I thought he could beat with his other squad. And that was the deal with KD. And then for LeBron, I guess you just didn't like the fact that they became such favorites overnight when he joined Miami that, you know, that obviously was different. But then, of course, I wanted Kawhi Leonard to join the Lakers, so who knows what the hell I'm talking about. So they had this ranking here. I want to talk about this real quick. ESPN did the all-time NBA ranking. All-time NBA ranking. And I want to give you guys the top 10 real quick. I'll read off some tweets as well. Not that crazy of Laker fans out there. They weren't too happy with this ranking. Shaquille O'Neal at number 10. I'll tell you right now, that Shaq's too far back. He shouldn't be 10. He should be up closer. But he's top 10. Kobe at number 9. Kobe should be up closer. Kobe won 5 NBA championships, did it with 2 different regimes. did it with Shaq and a completely different team, and then a few years later does it again. This time he does it with Pau Gasol and the rest of the squad. Number eight, they have Tim Duncan. Should Tim Duncan be ahead of Kobe and Shaq? Listen, Tim is an all-time great. Five championships, the big fundamental. Should he be in front of Kobe and Shaq? I don't think he should. Should Larry Bird be in front of Kobe? Kobe played 20 years in the league, and I know how big Larry Bird was to the NBA. He went to the finals five times, won three championships. Kobe went seven times, won five NBA championships. Again, did it in two different regimes. After that, they put Wilt Chamberlain, Magic Johnson, top five. Magic Johnson, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, LeBron James, and Michael Jordan. How about six of the top 10 players all time wore a Los Angeles Lakers jersey at one point? And only one of those players does not have an NBA championship with the Los Angeles Lakers. That's LeBron James. And if we get this season back, maybe we could talk about LeBron having a championship with Cleveland, Miami, and the Los Angeles Lakers. So we'll see what happens on that front. But how about that? Six of the top 10 players in the NBA on this top 10 list. They're all Los Angeles Lakers. And real Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, one of the greatest Lakers of all time. Kobe, the greatest Laker of all time. Magic, Kareem. I mean, the cream of the crop. Wilt Chamberlain. Only one doesn't have a championship, and that's LeBron James. It has nothing to do with LeBron. It just has to do with the amount of years that he's played with the Lakers, only his second year. Okay, so some of these other, as they go through the ranking, not crazy about this one. Steph Curry is the 13th greatest player of all time. Do I hate on Steph Curry? I don't even know if I do. But you got Steph Curry in front of Kevin Durant? Get out of here. You're going to tell me right now, if you're starting a franchise, you're taking Steph Curry before KD. Steph Curry before KD. Not happening. They got Jerry West and Julius Erving after Steph Curry as well. This is another one that I'm not crazy about. How is Giannis Antetokounmpo number 27 on the list? Giannis is amazing. Giannis is only 25. Giannis is going to be a freaking star. Giannis already ahead of Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton, Allen Iverson. Already ahead of Kevin McHale, Patrick Ewing. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not crazy about some of these players on this list. I mean, I said this to start the show. It all comes down to preference. It all comes down to, do you like this type of food or do you not like this type of food? And I think with this case, it's the same thing. Some think Shaq is the top, you know, three of all time. Some think Kobe have to be top five. I will tell you that number nine, that's too far down the ranking for Kobe Bryant. And I think number 10 is too far down the ranking for Shaquille O'Neal as well. Maybe I'm being biased, but I'm not trying to be biased. I'm just trying to be real. All right, don't forget, tomorrow morning, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will get things started at 6 a.m. Sedano Show follows. Will Kane after that. Mason in Ireland. And then the Sliwa Show, I'll do crosstalk at 6 o'clock, have no idea what to expect. Maybe I'll get hammered by the guys. Maybe I'll fire back. Maybe not. We'll see what will happen. Sliwa Show tomorrow. Appreciate you guys tuning in.